There's several students missing. Are they sick? Okay, others are just okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Three verses together. Must 37-39. So we'll chant all three. Satatra dadvishe vishwam.
Satatra dadvishe vishwam.
Jagat stasnu chakom dishaha.
Jagat stasnu chakom dishaha.
Sadri dweep abdi bugolam.
Sadri dweep abdi bugolam.
Savai vagnindu tarakam.
Savai vagnindu.
Jyotish Chakram Jalam Tejo.
Jyotish Chakram Jalam Tejo.
Nabaswan Viyadevacha.
Nabaswan Viyadevacha.
Vaikarikan Indriyani.
Vaikarikan Indriyani.
Manomatra Gunastrayaha.
Manomatra Gunastrayaha.
Etad Vichitram Sahajiva Kala.
Etad Vichitram Sahajiva Kala.
Swabhava Karmashaya Linga Bheda.
Swabhava Karmashaya Linga Bheda.
Sunostana Vikshya Vidaritasya.
Sunostana Vikshya Vidaritasya.
Vajam Sahatmanam Avapashankam.
Vajam Sahatmanam Avapashankam.
Tatra. Within the wide open mouth of Krishna.
Within the wide open mouth of Krishna.
Dadvishe.
Dadvishe.
Saw. Vishwam. The whole universe.
The whole universe.
Jagat.
Jagat.
Moving entities.
Moving entities.
Stasnu.
Stasnu.
Maintenance of non-moving entities.
Maintenance of non-moving entities.
Cha.
And.
Kam.
The sky.
Dishaha.
Dishaha.
The directions.
Sa-adri.
With the mountains.
Dweepa.
Islands.
Abdi.
And oceans.
Bhugolam.
The surface of the earth.
Savayu.
With the blowing wind. Agni.
Fire.
Indu.
The moon.
Taraka.
Stars.
Jyotik Chakram. The planetary systems.
Jalam.
Water.
Tejaha.
Light.
Nabasvan.
Outer space.
Viyat.
The sky.
Eva.
Also.
Cha.
And.
Vaikarikani.
Creation by transformation of ahankara.
Indriyani.
The senses.
Manaha.
Mind.
Matra.
Sense perception.
Gunatraya.
The three material qualities.
Qualities.
Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas.
Sattva, Rajas, and
Tamas.
Etat.
All these.
Vichitra.
Varieties.
Varieties.
Saha.
Along with.
Jivakala.
Jivakala.
The duration of life of all living entities.
Swabhava.
Natural instinct.
Karma ashraya.
Resultant action and desire for material enjoyment.
Resultant action and desire for material enjoyment.
Lingabhedam.
Lingabhedam.
Varieties of bodies according to desire.
Varieties of bodies according to desire.
Sunoktanao.
Sunoktanao.
In the body of her son.
In the body of her son.
Vikshya. Seeing. Vidarita asye.
Vidarita asye.
Within the wide opened mouth.
Within the wide opened mouth.
Vrajab.
Vrindavan
Dham. Nanda Maharaja's place.
Nanda Maharaja's place.
Saha Atmanam.
Saha Atmanam.
Along with herself.
Avapa.
Avapa. Was struck.
Was struck.
Shankam. With all doubt. Doubts and wonder. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, she saw within his mouth all moving and non-moving entities, outer space, and all directions, along with the mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the blowing wind, fire, the moon, and the stars. She saw the planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and creation by transformation of Ahankara. She also saw the senses, the mind, sense perception, and the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance. She saw the time allotted for the living entities, and she saw natural instinct and the reactions of karma. And she saw desires and different varieties of bodies, moving and non-moving. Seeing all these aspects of the cosmic manifestation, along with herself and Vrindavan Dham, she became doubtful and fearful of her son's nature. Purport. All the cosmic manifestations that exist on the gross and subtle elements, as well as the means of their agitation, the three gunas, the living entity, creation, maintenance, annihilation, and everything going on in the external energy of the Lord. All this comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. Everything is within the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mayad yokshina prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Everything in the material world, prakriti, works under his control. Because all these manifestations come from Govinda, they could all be visible within the mouth of Govinda. Quite astonishingly, Mother Yashoda was afraid because of intense maternal affection. She could not believe that within the mouth of her son such things could happen. Yet she saw them, and therefore she was struck with fear and wonder. So now Mother Yashoda is experiencing something that is abnormal for her. This does happen, that sometimes there is a momentary experience in spiritual life, in the experience of pure Krishna consciousness. Sometimes one's sthayi bhava, one's regular mood, is temporarily replaced by one of the other moods, especially these seven minor rasas, like astonishment and terror and compassion, are sometimes temporarily prominent. So here, Mother Yashoda is experiencing astonishment and also fear. It's very appropriate to this particular pastime of Krishna revealing for a short moment, in a very astonishing way, revealing all his opulences. Even the very subtle opulences, the causal elements of creation, the three modes of nature, the karma and the desires of the living entities. How do you see these? You know, they're not visible. Only very specially empowered living entities, certain yogis, can see the subtle elements of creation, can perceive them. Otherwise, ordinary living beings don't have the apparatus to see. These are invisible, imperceptible, too subtle for most anyone to perceive. But Mother Yashoda, she was given special vision momentarily to see this. Just like very similar event was when Arjuna, in the 11th chapter of the Gita, was shown by Krishna his universal form. In fact, this chapter is also called chapter 8 of Canto 10, as Lord Krishna shows his universal form. Another devotee, who is actually in a different relationship with Krishna, one of intimate friendship, casual friendship. There are different kinds of friends with Krishna. Some of them are respectful toward him because they're younger, and their friendship is mixed with servitude. But Arjuna was a very close friend. Outside of Vrindavan, you can say he's practically Krishna's closest friend. Very tight with Krishna, not much in the mood of awe and reverence, except for on this one occasion, Krishna inspired him with awe and reverence in a big way for a short time when he showed the universal form. And he told Krishna, you can't see me with your normal, in your normal mood, you cannot even perceive this universal form. Divyam dadami te chakshu pasya me yogamaisharam. So I'll give you special divya eyes, divine eyes. Of course, the Mayavadis take this to mean that this is the real vision. You know, that this is the essence of the Gita. That Krishna has to give you divine eyes. The Guru has to zap you with the Shakti pot and you get the divine eyes. But that's not the essence of Krishna consciousness. This is just a special pastime. There's nothing wrong with Arjuna's eyes. He doesn't need glasses. His eyes are fine. But in order to see universal form, he's got to change. He's got to put on, just like you put on these 3D spectacles to watch a 3D movie. So, you know, it's an unusual situation. You need different eyes. Because in the eyes of the pure love of a friend of Krishna, you just don't think of him as terrible. You know, you just can't do that. But, so Krishna gave Arjuna temporarily different eyes. And so, it's not stated here, but it's obvious that Mother Yashoda is looking at things differently than she normally does. She doesn't usually go around her house, you know, and see the elements of creation, you know, on the wall, on the ceiling. You know, she doesn't usually perceive with that subtle vision. It's just not appropriate to her pastimes. You know, what she sees is, you know, that Krishna spilled the yogurt again, broke the pots. You know, this is her vision. That's appropriate to her pastimes, to her mood. But momentarily, there's a shift of mood. Rasa is not static. Spiritual life is not evolving, but ever full of variety. So therefore, there should be some different things happening. And this is another very special thing that happened to Mother Yashoda. It's recorded of happening twice in the Bhagavatam, that Mother Yashoda saw a universal form in Krishna's mouth. Also, the Krishna devouring forest fire happens twice. Two different forest fires. Both of those pastimes involve Krishna displaying special power. Usually a little boy doesn't swallow fires. Nor does he. So in the forest fires, swallowing pastime, he's devouring something very big, taking something in. And in this pastime, he's showing something very big within himself. In other words, everything within himself. Siddhantically, there's nothing amazing about Krishna having everything within himself. He's God. What's the reason to be surprised? Naita chitram sarvamaye. You know, this is not amazing for him who everybody should know he contains everything. Is Mother Yashoda ignorant? Why is she so amazed? But this is the arrangement of Yogamaya. That there's always a sense of astonishment. Chamatkara. Many of the theoreticians of poetry tell you that
The real essence of all rasas is chamatkara, astonishment. If there isn't a sense of wonder, then there's no real rasa. It's just, you know, sensation. I can, you know, feel a sensation. I can put my finger on a battery, you know, and feel the shock. Or I can have some mundane sense gratification that momentarily gives me some sensation. But that's not rasa. Rasa means a sense of astonishment. Experience that is unusual and amazing and leaves you struck with wonder. That must be there in any real spiritual experience. So Krishna's energies, his divine energies, are range. That is always everything that goes on in Krishna's pastimes is always amazing. Even the small things. Krishna doesn't have to reveal universal form to make his loving devotees amazed. They're always amazed. Baby Krishna just yawns, or he scratches himself, or he just crawls on the ground, and they're all amazed. Everything he does is amazing. But also, sometimes Krishna shows, even within the realm of pure madhurya, of pure sweetness, where the even superior amazement of how sweet Krishna is prominent. Even in that realm, sometimes there's some mixture to make a sweet taste. You put a little pepper in the sweet, something a little different. So there's a little bit of Aishwarya introduced just to give it a special taste. That's pastimes, few pastimes like this, where, of course, there are many pastimes where Krishna kills demons in Vraja. And Shukadev Goswami has chosen to make them very prominent in his narration of the 10th canto. It's not actually that all Krishna ever does is kill as a baby, that he's just some mass murderer and his main activity is killing people.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And those who don't like Krishna, you know, look and see these things. You know, the God you're worshipping is horrible. He just kills people. But Shukadev made a presentation that put highlighted these killing of demons. Not that Krishna, of course, maybe he killed a demon every day. But he didn't spend all day killing demons. You know, a few minutes in the morning, you know, get rid of one demon and then play for the rest of the day. You know, he's not only or most of the time killing. But Shukadev Goswami has chosen to put a highlight on these pastimes, to give a lot of attention to those, the killing of various demons. It's out of consideration of his audience. Bhagavatam, of course, is written Nirmatsaranam Satam Vedyam. It is especially meant to be appreciated, to be understood. The rasa of the Bhagavatam can be understood by those who are perfectly situated transcendentalists, who are completely free from envy. They're the ones who can actually taste the rasa, the mellows, that are revealed in the Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam is also for aspiring devotees who need to be purified and who still have material distractions and interests. So there are exciting pastimes. There are the narrations of the life and deeds of various kings and of Krishna in his various incarnations. Many of these pastimes are very exciting to attract the attention of living entities who are still, or rather devotees, who are still somewhat conditioned and still somewhat have some kind of material taste and interest. So the Bhagavatam talks about things that are, let's say, peripheral to the real essential pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. His pastimes in other incarnations, some could argue that why are these talked about so much, why not just get right to the Vraja Leela? And why is there so much discussion of people who weren't even devotees, or weren't even pure devotees, and just happened to be ancestors of Krishna. Why so much about that? Why so many lists just of names? But this all serves purpose. In order to get our attention, to focus us gradually on the real essence, the summum bonum, contained within the 10th canto. In the other first 9 cantos, we're given something to attract us to Krishna, to teach us who Krishna is. And the living entity will first of all be attracted by Krishna's opulence and his power, and the more exciting pastimes where he's killing his enemies and doing other interesting things, things that would be of interest to mundane souls. So the Bhagavatam also employs these devices of attracting the attention of the conditioned souls gradually toward Krishna and toward a gradual understanding of Krishna's essential nature, the more intimate aspects of Krishna's loving devotion with his intimate devotees. Gradually we're introduced to that. Gradually we're trained up in the taste for appreciating that, these more intimate pastimes. And then we come to the 10th canto. Now in our morning reading we've gone beyond the 10th canto. We're in the beginning of the 11th canto. Still Krishna is in the picture. The final pastimes, Maushala Lila, are described in the first couple of chapters and the last couple of chapters of the 11th canto. Their devotees are not usually too happy to hear about Krishna's leaving, so the departure pastimes are not talked about so much, because devotees are not happy to hear about them. But there they are, in the 11th canto, how Krishna and his devotees left this world. But it involves Krishna. He's still in the picture. And most of the rest of the 11th canto is the conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, the instructions that Krishna gave to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita, more elaborate than the Bhagavad Gita. Just as Arjuna was, in one category, Krishna's closest friend, in another category, Uddhava was. And he was Krishna's advisor, his minister. So to Uddhava, Krishna spoke very intimate and very philosophical instructions. This is in the 11th canto. So Krishna's there as the teacher. Krishna doesn't do much teaching in the rest of the Bhagavatam. He usually talks very briefly. And if he has some instructions to give, he gives it concisely, here and there, not systematically. Most of all, he's mostly acting in the Bhagavatam more than speaking, where, you know, in the 10th canto. But the place where Krishna speaks at length, and where he takes the role of a teacher, is his instructions to Uddhava in the 11th canto. So here we have the 10th and 11th cantos, where the focus is on Krishna himself. Krishna acting, and then in the 11th canto, Krishna speaking. But the other parts of the Bhagavatam are there to gradually attract us to Krishna. It's more for a conditioned soul, it's easier to be attracted to the opulence of God than to be attracted to his sweetness. It takes a mature spiritual attitude to accept that this little boy is actually God. This older boy who's having so many girlfriends, how he can be God. This is difficult for less mature devotees to understand. Therefore, there are many who prefer to be devotees of Lord Ramachandra. They are bewildered by Krishna and his pastimes. And they openly preach that Ram and his pastimes is better because it's easier for people to understand how God can behave as Lord Ramachandra behaved. But Krishna, his behavior is too strange. Therefore, we'd rather be devotees of Lord Ramachandra. But we can. Even we, who we have a difficult, speaking for myself, accepting anybody as God. Yeah. I want to be God. So therefore, it's difficult for me to fully appreciate Krishna's pastimes, because I want to compete with Krishna. But gradually, even such bewildered souls can be rectified. Their attitude and their understanding can be rectified. The Bhavatam is for that purpose, to train us up to actually understand and be attracted to Krishna as he is, in his essence. Very fortunate that we are given this opportunity. Even the rare souls who can earn liberation by devotion to the personality of Godhead, they can simply go to Vaikuntha and worship for eternity Lord Narayan. We're being offered something even better than that. By the arrangement of Sri Shukadeva Goswami and later on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has come, and part of his pastimes is to teach and promote the Srimad Bhagavatam and to further this program of Shukadeva Goswami of putting Krishna in the real center. Compare Mahabharata, where Krishna is also prominently present, but he's not in the center. He's just the friend and helper, the well-wisher of the Pandavas. The Pandavas are in the center in the Mahabharata. They're the heroes. Krishna is just a side character. And he only briefly reveals his essence when he speaks to Arjuna in the Bhishma Parva, the Bhagavad Gita. Elsewhere, he doesn't really reveal himself very much. And Mahabharata, even much more than the Bhagavatam, is full of excitement. Politics, sex, the things that people, you know, want to see when they turn on their television and read the newspapers. People, things that ordinary people are interested in. Mahabharata is full of that. And it promotes the idea of attaining heaven, that the perfection of life is to go to Swargaloka. So Mahabharata, even much more than the Bhagavatam, is attracting with Gramya Katha, with apparently mundane narrations, attracting people toward the right path. But the Bhagavatam is on a much higher level. Although Mahabharata is also called Panchama Veda, and if it wasn't for the Bhagavatam, Mahabharata would be the most important scripture. But it only comes in second in the race with the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is heads ahead of Mahabharata, because it leaves out everything mundane. Dharma projita kaito votra. Every kind of cheating religion is put aside by Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sridhar Swami explains that cheating religion means even the aspiration for liberation. To promote the idea of liberation as the perfection of life is also cheating. But to speak of promoting the attainment of heaven as the goal of life. So Bhagavatam doesn't do that to people. It doesn't mislead them by giving them something lesser to be satisfied with. So this is the program of Shukadeva Goswami, to direct us toward the best thing, the loving, intimate service of Krishna, in the way that he reveals himself in his eternal abodes, Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes.
So how can we bring in the sense of chamatkara or the wonder in our devotional activities as hearing, chanting, more efficiently and generated?
We have to avoid being distracted. A person fails to be amazed because he's distracted or he's mentally disturbed, emotionally disturbed. So therefore, he doesn't, you know, feel things. He doesn't feel the right emotion, appropriate emotions. something that shouldn't cause amazement, he doesn't notice it or he doesn't react to it properly because he's mentally distracted or emotionally disturbed. And we are all like that. You know, we may not be clinically, you know, mentally ill, but we're all disturbed in our feelings and distracted in our thoughts. Maybe not to the extent of being diagnosable as neurotic or schizophrenic, but still, we are disturbed. Kalavasmin yuge jana. Everybody's disturbed in Kali Yuga. Disturbed mentally and emotionally. And because of that, we don't feel the appropriate feelings. We don't feel amazement when we should feel. You know, we should be amazed just to hear of Krishna's glories. But we're in Mangalarti listening to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's wonderful description of the glories of the spiritual master. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti, his realizations are of the highest level, and he's revealing them to us, who the spiritual master is. And we're in Mangalarti just trying to stay awake. Yeah. Not feeling the amazement. Because we're distracted and disturbed. So that we have to deal with. We have to become pacified. We have to, you know, be relieved of our disturbance and distractions and focus ourselves on the real essence of Krishna consciousness. Yes, we can we can dovetail our propensities. Our passionate and even tamasic propensities can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. And we can do so many practical things to serve Krishna. But ultimately, we have to put aside all this rajas and tamas and even sattva and focus just on the essence without any distractions, without any inappropriate feelings. Then we'll taste the chamatkar. Only then. You know, don't expect it prematurely. You may get a little taste, a little sneak preview. But to really taste it, and to be tasting it all the time, to be fixed in your sthayi bhava and feeling ecstasy all the time, you have to be totally free from material distractions and disturbances. That will come with maturity. It doesn't come easily. Yeah. So we can taste some. Krishna can just bless us with some amazing, you know, sense of amazement momentarily. But to feel it all the time, we have to become very advanced in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Yes?
Have people who, liberation is mentioned over and over and over again as being inferior.
Yes.
People who reach liberation, do they have a sense of that amazement? Or are they not getting that?
Depends on, no, well, there's different kinds of liberation. Depends on which liberation they attain.
The one that's
got them. There's no rasa. In personal liberation, there's no real rasa. There's your brahmananda, but that's not rasa. So, it's just a sensation. It's, you know, something. You can call it spiritual bliss, but the chamat, whatever little chamatkara there is so pale that it doesn't even count when you compare it to bhakti rasa. So yeah, some a little bit of amazement. You know, I mean, you can say there's some amazement even in material experiences. But relatively, it's nothing.
Sensation, not amazement.
Well, you can say amazement, but very, very meager in comparison. It's spiritual. If you're actually liberated, then you're experiencing something spiritual. But without Krishna being in the picture in one of his personal forms, then there's no focus, there's no vishaya for any rasa, for any spiritual emotions. It's just, yeah, it's just a sensation because it's impersonal. There's no person to focus it on. If Krishna comes into the picture, then it becomes devotional service. Okay. Yes?
Certain pastimes that Krishna performs twice. Is there any reason that he does that twice?
Well, Krishna actually does things many times.
Yeah.
In his Aprakata Lila, he's doing things over and over again. Mm-hmm. So the real question is, why did Shukadev describe it like this?
Yeah, I mean, when he was here 5,000 years ago, this. Many pastimes, even twice,
Rasmita did twice. Yeah, or many times. But Shukadev was selective. He usually described everything briefly and only once. He doesn't, have the space to give multiple descriptions. These two pastimes, I don't know why. Both of them are described briefly. He doesn't waste a lot of space on them. But twice. I can't say.
Also, yeah. When we say that the previous nine cantos are meant to prepare one for understanding the subject matter that's presented in the tenth canto,
yes.
Then why is it that the same kinds of things are repeated again in the 11th and 12th canto, that preliminary sort of preparation?
It's like the Gita is a sandwich. The essence is in the middle. But you need, you know, for a sandwich to work as a sandwich, you need bread on both sides. You know, otherwise it falls apart. So you need a cover on the front and the back. So, you know, the essence of the bhakti, the 10th canto essence, is surrounded by, on one hand, the purification provided in the first nine cantos, and then the 11th and 12th cantos, the philosophical, you know, formulation, the philosophical summary. You could say the Gyanakanda of the Bhagavatam is there in the 11th and 12th cantos. They're both preparation. There's preparation on the karma path and preparation on the jnana path. What people whose adhikar is karma need is purification. They're materialistic. So they need to get a higher taste and especially to lose their lower taste. So the first nine cantos teach attraction to the Lord's devotees, to the various forms of the Lord, and a strong sense of renunciation is cultivated in the first nine cantos. Reasons to be disgusted with the material world are given to us in the first nine cantos. And then you could say that I'm speculating here, the 11th and 12th cantos are giving, you know, instructions for those who otherwise are inclined to be a jnani. Certainly the Urdhva Gita is attractive to jnanis, including the Mayavadis. They like it. And some things in the 12th canto are also really, especially for jnanis. And it's another kind of sadhana. There's, you know, they're much in the minority, the jnanis, but they don't have much attachment to the material world. Their problem is not that they don't have enough vairagya, their problem is they have too much. You know, they're so disgusted with everything, they don't even want to be Krishna's devotee. So, but for those, they need to be rectified also. The instructions for them are given in the last two cantos. It's also preliminary, coming from the other side.
A related question is that we say that Bhagavatam is superlative because it kicks out all Kaitava Dharma.
Yes.
Which, as you mentioned, is like Mahabharata is full of more racy topics that appeal to the conditioned minds.
Yes.
We can say maybe in summary that it's kicking out karma and jnana. But at the same time, we see that there is a lot of this in the Bhagavatam as well. So how do we reconcile that logically?
The claim will be that in the Bhagavatam, whatever discussion there seems to be of mundane topics is actually connected with the glorification, understanding and glorification of Krishna. Mm-hmm. That it's not karma again for its own sake, but only for the advancement of bhakti.
Mm-hmm. It's made explicit, in other words, what the purpose of all of that is.
It's a course of programmed instruction that leads us to the essence. It doesn't leave us on a lower level, ever. Mm-hmm. It puts everything into the higher perspective. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
We see Srimad Bhagavatam as the Lord Krishna in his Vangmaya Swarupa.
Which Swarupa?
Vangmaya
Swarupa.
Vangmaya, okay. Yes.
I would like to know what is that Vangmaya Swarupa.
Oh, Vangmaya means literature. You know, Vak is Mother Saraswati, the goddess of speech. So, language. The Bhagavatam is Krishna in the form of words. It's a book. Krishna in the form of a book. You know, books are literature. You know, so that's called Vanmaya. In ordinary circles, you distinguish scientific books from literature. you know, books that teach you how to, you know, fix a car, that's not literature, that's just textbook. That's Shastra or, you know, science. But literary books, books that tell stories and entertain, that's Vāṅmya, literature. So this is the literary form of Krishna, composed by the literary incarnation of Krishna, Vyasadeva.
On a separate topic but related to this question. Why do we call literature sahitya?
Sahitya. Is much here? No. I don't remember. There was an explanation, but I don't remember what it was.
Much included, I think, the explanation in the first...
No, it's there. I just don't remember what it is.
Sahitya? Yeah, we have a shloka like this in the beginning of the karanas.
Yeah. Yes. And there's
explanation. Sahitya dijam odan.
So what does sahitya mean? Why does it mean literature?
Mm-hmm.
Got me. I just don't remember. It's there, but I don't remember.
I'll look it up.
Okay. Yeah, in the Mangalacharya. Thank you. Yes, bro.
Right. So I'm in the stage of just preaching because I'm getting that I'm preaching, so that pleasure is helping me to go on with this. But ultimately, it is a kind of sense gratification. We are not developing Krishna prema. Will that come later on? Like you said, when you do more service.
Well, by preaching, you may get pleasure out of it. Therefore, you're calling it sense gratification. You may feel proud of yourself that you're preaching. But also, Krishna gets pleasure from it. You're serving Krishna's purposes and he's satisfied. So by doing that preaching, you are making advancement. It's not just sense gratification. It may have an element of sense gratification in it, the way you're experiencing it. But because it's serving Krishna's purpose in an important way and giving him real satisfaction, therefore, that can be counteracted by the spiritual benefits. You know, a person could become so carried away that he could ruin the good effects of his preaching by committing offenses. You know, become too proud and start deviating or start committing aparat against somebody. But if you avoid that, then just keep on preaching, then Krishna will be so pleased with you that whatever element of desire for sense gratification was there will just melt away. You know, the activity will become pure. You don't have to give this up. Oh, now I have to, you know, after a while I have to stop my preaching and just sit down and you know, and meditate on Krishna. No, the preaching is the best meditation. You just have to purify it. Let it, don't get in the way of it. Let it carry itself out and purify you. Just don't ruin it by committing aparads or getting too proud, that's all. Otherwise, it'll work. It will transform you and everybody else who's engaged in your preaching. It's a special activity. Okay, we can stop now. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.